You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we're starting a two-part series with our very special guest, Ron Wilkerson. How's it going, Ron?
It's going fine.
Cool. Now, for those people who don't know, you've written for both Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Voyager. Is that right?
Yes, I wrote for both of those, and I also wrote for Stargate SG-1. For all those right. fans out there, those Gate fans.
Cool. Yeah, unfortunately, Max and I are sort of Stargate illiterate, but...
That's okay.
But I have said on many occasions, I will get around to it. It looks really cool.
It's worth it.
I know it is. I've seen good stuff. It's just there's a lot of backstory there I need to get to.
Yeah, and you got to start at the beginning like any series. You got to do it from the beginning.
Of course. Yeah. But we're very familiar with your work on Star Trek, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But first, next week we're going to be discussing your new novel, which is called Houdini and Lovecraft: The Ghost Rider. Do you want to give people sort of an idea of what that's about?
Well, we're going to go into it in great detail next week, but it's a novel that I based on a screenplay that I had written about 10 years ago, and the screenplay made its way around the studios and almost had a deal, and as often happens, deals fall through. But I really liked the story a lot, and I thought it deserved to be fleshed out a little bit more. It's basically a historical fiction. I was really intrigued by the idea that Harry Houdini and H.P. Lovecraft actually collaborated back in the 1920s. Houdini used Lovecraft to write one of his story ideas that he had. And I thought, well, what if we kind of take that relationship a little bit further? And so basically, I took them and put them into an adventure story that starts out as a haunted house and goes much further beyond than that. And I'm happy with the way it turned out. And I published it, I guess, in November on Amazon. And it's available there for in Kindle download or for in paperback. And so that's really all I'll say about it for now. We'll save some of the mystery for next time, but it's a rousing adventure story, and I hope your fans check it out.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it. It sounds very interesting to me.
And I'm a big Lovecraft fan. And it's right up our alley.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm excited. Yeah. So we'll be talking about that next time. So, Star Trek. You've written either the stories or the screenplays for seven episodes. Just so that people have an idea, I'm just going to go down the list. You've written the screenplays for Lessons from Next Generation and Learning Curve for Voyager. That's right.
Right.
And then you've written the stories for Imaginary Friend, Schisms, and Lower Decks for Next Generation. And then Fair Trade and Ashes to Ashes for Voyager, right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, out of all of those, which one are you the most proud of? Which do you feel successfully conveyed what you were trying to get across?
Well, you know, if you talk to any writer about their work, you know, we look at our episodes kind of like our children, and so it's like, which one is your favorite child? You know, it's a tough choice. You know, today I happen to be particularly high on Lessons because, I don't know if you noticed, but Star Trek Online picked Lessons as one of the top 10 best Trek romances. Today's Valentine's Day.
And,
they chose that episode and the relationship between Captain Picard and Nella Darren as one of the top 10 romances on all of Trek, and we ended up being number 3 behind only. Number 2 was Riker and Troy, and number 1 was Kirk and the Enterprise, of course.
Kirk and the Enterprise.
One of the great romances in Star Trek history.
I want to read that slash fiction.
So I guess Lessons, today I'm particularly high on Lessons, but I love them all because they all have a place in my heart.
Well, I love Lessons. Lessons is really high on my list.
Thanks.
Just standout Next Gen episodes.
Thank you.
I agree. You know, I mean, like thinking about it, you know, going back and thinking about when I first saw it, it really struck a chord with me. And it does something that, you know, we really haven't seen, which is, you know, a romance for, well, a romance period on Next Generation. You know, those were few and far between. But
well, there were a lot of romances, but you didn't really buy most of them.
I guess that's true. I guess that's the difference.
Riker hooked up with a lot of aliens.
That's true. But with this one, you really felt for Picard, you know?
Well, it was an important part of his development, and really it was suggested to us vaguely by Jerry Taylor and Michael Piller. And we were, I was with my co-writer Gene Mathias. We were freelancing for Trek, and we had had an episode earlier in the sixth season called Schisms that we were supposed to write the teleplay for, and it was slated for, I think, episode 8 or 9 in the season, something like that. And what happened is once they got into development and into production on that season, Paramount felt that they needed a more action-oriented episode earlier in the season. And so what happened is they bumped Schisms up to, I think, episode number 5, and it was on a much tighter deadline. And so we didn't get to write the teleplay for that, and it was kind of a disappointment. So to kind of make up for that and to kind of give us a little bit of a, throw us a bone to give us a chance at another episode, Jerry Taylor suggested the concept of an interoffice romance, that Michael Piller had actually come up with the concept of wanting Picard to have an interoffice romance. But they hadn't really developed, nobody on staff had really been able to develop a take on it. And so she said to us, see if you can do something with that. And that was the genesis of how the episode began.
As much as I like Schisms, I'm sort of glad that, you know, that someone else ended up writing it so that you got the shot at Lessons, because, I mean, Lessons is fantastic. You know, that's one of the best episodes of season 6. And
thanks.
Season 6 is my favorite season by far.
There are episodes of Next Gen that if I were telling somebody, you need to watch Star Trek, where I would say, you don't have to watch that. A lot of season 1 falls into that category.
Yep.
But like Lessons is like you have to see that before you get to the movies.
It was an important development for Picard, because he had had romances, but they were either with, you know, people who were unattainable, or they were, you know, like on The Inner Light, you know, something that happened really to somebody else on another planet. And so he hadn't, other than Vash, he hadn't really had a direct romance himself. And you never had a feeling that that Vash was really into him so much as she was using him. And they wanted him to have a real romance, and that's why we brought Nella into it. And the complicating factor that Michael wisely realized when he developed that initial concept was an inter-office romance and all the things that is involved with inter-office romance, of, you know, the captain having a romance with someone under his command. And then, of course, the worst part of that was having to potentially send that person on a mission in which they might not come back. So that was... it was a very interesting episode from the standpoint of Picard's personal development.
Yeah, and the other thing that it does, which you seem to do a lot with your episodes, is it brought in elements from previous episodes, you know, which is something that, I mean, I know that's a standard TV thing to do, but it's not something that you see on Star Trek very often.
Yeah, it's, you know, continuity as a thing.
Yeah.
I assume that you're referring to the musical aspect and the flute that Picard played in the episode The Inner Light. And that really was the element that sold the episode and got us the shot at doing it. The development of it was a little bit, as all episodes, they go through a birthing process. It's not always so pleasant. We ran with the idea of an inter-office romance. We came back and we pitched... Jerry Taylor, and I think it was just Jerry and Ron Moore was the other person that was in the meeting at the time. And we pitched them our take on it, and Jerry liked one aspect of it, Ron liked another aspect of it, and before you knew it, they were arguing, which is the worst possible position for a freelancer to be, you know, is to have execs on the show arguing about your idea, and it didn't look like it was going anywhere. And basically, we called a timeout and said, let us go back and look at the thing again and see if we can come in with a different take on it, because the music wasn't originally an aspect of the story. What ultimately happened is we went back to the drawing board, and I realized the episode The Inner Light was an important episode for Picard, in that he, it was a real romance, and I thought that the flute was a really nice kind of holdover from that episode, that he would be playing the flute as an expression of his lost love and love for the woman that he had in that episode. And so that's really where the thing came from. So we pitched music as the thing that would bring this new love, this new interoffice romance together with Picard. And that became the selling point.
Is that something that you consciously try to bring into your stuff? I mean, it really does seem lacking in most places in Star Trek. But I mean, like, just thinking about like Lower Decks by bringing in Ensign Sito, or on Voyager with Learning Curve dealing with the Maquis thing. Do you consciously try to bring in elements from earlier in the series, or is that just sort of a coincidental thing?
No, I think, like I said, we weren't on staff at the time that we developed those episodes, so we have about as much insight to the show as anybody watching it. we have production notes, and we have the writer's bible, and we have some things, episodes that might be currently in development. But at a certain point, they even stopped giving that out because it started showing up at fan conventions. So we, as writers, as freelance writers, very often you're in the dark. Don't know much more about the show than a fan would watching the show. And so what we tried to do is we tried to use elements of previous stories that gave us kind of a door into a new episode that we would be writing. And that's why when we came back to Jerry with the idea of using the music from The Inner Light and using Picard's flute from The Inner Light as sort of bridge to a new romance, that's why that seemed to work. Likewise, we're jumping ahead to Lower Decks, but that was an episode that we basically sold without really any prior connection to a previous episode. It was only when we were first, or once we were into the story meetings and we had sold the episode, that I think it was Ron Moore brought up we were talking about who these young people in the Lower Decks might be. And I think it was Ron Moore that brought up the idea of Ensign Sito, who we all liked from the episode, I think it was called The First Duty, that was a Wesley episode. And we thought, well, we know what Wesley's path had been, getting onto this Enterprise after that episode, what might have happened to Sito. And so we were able to bring her in, and because she was a Bajoran, we were also able to bring in the B story, which is the Cardassian story. So in a way, like I said, if you're a freelancer, if you're any writer, really, you try to connect to some degree with previous episodes in order to bring some continuity to the show. We don't want to think that these characters haven't been changed by their experiences. We want to think that our characters don't just start out with a clean slate every week. And the holdover of Picard's lost love from The Inner Light was a very important aspect to our story.
I think it was important to fans, too. I found it very edifying that somebody finally addressed how significant that must have been.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you don't just have something like that happen to you and then walk away from it without really, having it affect you. I think that was what we were able to play in the episode.
So I guess moving on to Lower Decks, since we were kind of talking about it, I think both Max and I are in agreement that that's one of the very best episodes of Star Trek. It's right up there. And since you didn't actually write the screenplay for that episode, how satisfied are you with the finished product?
Oh, absolutely. That was another one that we were in a time crunch. it's funny because we were we pitched it and they bought the pitch right away because they really liked what we had to offer in that story. And then once we started developing it, I think the network got excited about it too. And again, it kind of got bumped up a little bit, as I recall. And that's why they gave it to Renee Echevarria to do the actual teleplay. But the teleplay was very much reflective of our story that we developed. It was pretty much note for note. The major addition that Renee did was the character of Ben, the bartender, who was kind of a Guinan stand-in with the young guys. And that was really the major change. But other than that, it was pretty much as we had written it out in our story outline. When you write a story outline for Trek, it's a pretty detailed document and pretty much says what the episode's going to be. And that's when you write a story, that's the thing that you end up with is a story outline. It's about a 5, 6, 7 page document that tells the story from beginning, middle to end. But I was really happy with it.
I mean, I know TV writing is all about, you know, collaboration. You know, there's so many people involved in each of these things. And I mean, you worked with a writing partner, it looks like for most of your career, or at least with Star Trek.
With Star Trek, yes.
Yeah, is that important to you to have collaborators?
Well, if first of all, if you're writing for TV, you're going to be collaborating. If you're writing in Hollywood, you're going to be collaborating because there are lots of other people that are involved in the project. And certainly on television, you're collaborating, not even with a writing partner necessarily, but you're certainly collaborating with the writing staff, the producers and the writers on staff, as well as the executive producer showrunner. And so you get used to it, and you get used to taking their ideas and incorporating their ideas into your story. And 9 times out of 10, they help you. Mm-hmm. Collaboration is the good thing. And where Gene and I basically just started out as fans of Star Trek, and we thought that, you know, we wanted to write for the show, and we wrote a spec script and submitted it to the show and got rejected. And we wrote a second spec script, submitted it, got rejected. But eventually that second spec script was resubmitted once we had a better agent and it got us a pitch meeting. But we basically started collaborating just because we were friends and we loved the show and thought we could write for it. So collaboration is a very important thing if you want to write in television. It's good. It's a good idea to get used to the idea that your ideas are going to be shared and sometimes changed. I mean, one of my favorite remembrances of Lessons is our first story meeting where we were really fleshing it out in the break session. The way it began with Picard trying to do a number of different things late at night and kind of being stymied again and again by somebody in the Stellar Science office, that was Jerry Taylor's idea. And it was basically introducing them through conflict. And when our first story meeting, I thought, oh, this isn't going to work at all. I didn't like it. I wasn't into it. And I slept on it and came back the next morning. I thought, this is the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. It really worked. And, you know, sometimes it just takes, you have to get over your own ego. And sometimes you just have to realize that the other people that you're working with truly do have the best interests of the show in mind, and that, you know, they're not trying to screw you over. They're not trying to, you know, dominate you or take over your story. They're really trying to tell the best story they can. So collaboration is, as I said, 9 times out of 10, a really good thing.
I guess, you know, kind of like spinning off of that, out of the episodes that you did not write the scripts for, are there any which were drastically changed from your original idea?
I would think the very first one that we did, Imaginary Friend, the Imaginary Friend was a very different kind of character. It wasn't another little girl. It was kind of like more of a grandfatherly figure that was kind of like a Rumpelstiltskin, kind of a troll type character that became the imaginary friend of this little girl. And they changed. That was really the biggest change. That changed to another girl that was her own age. And that story played out a little differently because of that. But for the most part, the other ones, Schisms, played out exactly as we had envisioned it. I think Fair Trade was the other one that we didn't write the teleplay for, that played out pretty much as we had expected.
Yeah, and Ashes to Ashes, was that a similar situation? Or?
Oh, gosh, you had to bring that up. Ashes to Ashes is one of my least pleasant experiences. I don't want to go into great detail on it, but it's
your least favorite child.
Yeah, there you go. It's the redheaded stepchild. Is that what they call it? I don't know. Yeah. The concept changed a lot from the initial story that I pitched, and I, you know, it's effective in its own way, but I really had it going a different way.
And I know that on Stargate SG-1, you did a lot of writing as well.
Yep.
Were you ever in a situation where the tables were turned and you were rewriting someone else's work?
Well, yes. When you're on staff on a show, you are necessarily more involved in manipulating. Is the worst possible word to use, but adding your thoughts to stories. And I know that that I was in that position on various stories, that I was able to influence the story in a different direction. But again, I don't think that you know, it ended up differently in a way that was not acceptable to the writer. So yes, I've been involved on both sides of the coin.
The other episode that you wrote the script for, which we didn't really get to yet, was Learning Curve, which was sort of the default season finale for season one of Voyager. Well, what are your thoughts on that one?
To some degree, that grew out of Lower Decks. Our concept with Lower Decks was Starship Enterprise has, you know, hundreds, I guess maybe even over 1,000 people on it. I can't recall the exact number. And for 7 seasons, you know, we really hadn't seen many of those folks. We had really seen our major cast, and of course, that's where we want to concentrate. But I really thought, let's tell the story of the little guy. And that was basically the pitch that we went into with Lower Decks. Let's look at an episode play out from the point of view of these junior officers, the people that don't get to sit at the card table with Riker and Troy and Data, the people that don't get to go on the bridge, but for occasionally. And one of my concepts of it was that in that episode, it would be really cool never to go on the bridge, is to just basically see the whole episode play out on the lower decks and in 10 forward or wherever, you know, other crew quarters might play. And for the most part, it did play out that way. And I think the fans really liked it a lot. I know Michael Piller liked it. He told us it was his favorite episode of the final season of Next Generation, which was very generous. And so we knew that there was a fan base built around that show, the way it turned out. And so to some degree, when Voyager came along and we had the intermix of these two different cultures, we had the Voyager crew that was for the most part Starfleet, and then we had the Maquis that were the opposite of Starfleet. They were, you know, the renegades and the rebels who basically had no Starfleet training. And yet they had to integrate those two crews onto one ship. And we felt that really hadn't been dealt with. And we pitched a number of different episodes, but the one that we ended up getting through was Learning Curve. And the concept of it was that these Maquis, for the most part, some of them have been able to fit in well on the ship, but quite a few others may not. And, you know, they might have even been more rebellious than the ones that were able to fit in, like Chakotay or B'Elanna. And so we thought, wouldn't it be cool to come up with, and this was the pitch, again, the line in the pitch that basically got the episode sold, was a Starfleet night school. Was kind of like the Starfleet extension program to sort of bring these guys in the Maquis up to Starfleet standard and basically integrate them into the ship a little bit better. So that's the genesis of that episode.
Max and I have both sort of gone on record as being not the biggest fans of Voyager in the world, and uh-huh. You know, one of the big problems that we have with it is the fact that
they abandoned the Maquis Starfleet integration concept
pretty much right after your episode.
I guess
they figured you touched on everything that ever needed to be touched on. You did it so perfectly that it never needed to be brought up again. But
Tuvok's an exceptionally good teacher.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about that? I mean, obviously it must be something that intrigued you if you know, dedicated an episode to it. Do you wish you could have gone back and dealt with that some more, or what's the deal with that?
Well, I do, and I do think that we pitched, I'm not exactly remembering, but I do think that we pitched some other episodes involving some of those characters. But sometimes you pitch things and they don't get bought, and that was one of the times that we were not able to really push that forward, and so we had to go other directions with the show. But you know, I like that concept of having characters that are not your regular characters interact with your main characters. Now, obviously, a show, you know, you have your main cast and they're paying them a salary, so they want to put them in front of the camera all the time, and I understand that. But from a fan standpoint and from a story standpoint, sometimes you have to take a step back and bring in other characters, and that also allows a level of danger that doesn't exist in a show that's all about your main characters. I mean, we know that, you know, for the most part, all those main characters are going to be back next week. Even though they go through hell or high water, they're going to be back the next week. And with a guest cast, like we did in Lower Decks and like we did in Learning Curve, it's not a guarantee that they're going to make it through to the next episode. So it brings in an element of danger that that you don't get with a normal cast.
Getting back to Learning Curve for just a minute, there's an issue which we would like to address and sort of I don't know, come to your defense on or what, but there's okay. a thing. There's a thing in that episode which has become sort of almost a meme in the Star Trek fan community, and that is the cheese element. Both Max and I are of the opinion that that is a perfectly reasonable, actually probably much more reasonable explanation for this scientific mumbo-jumbo than what they usually come up with.
Well, I mean, Voyager had a lot of, like, oh no, the wormhole got angry at us. And yeah. and it's like there's a lot of, you know, sort of nonsense that's being spewed, and then you just go like, I guess, fine, they turned into bats, whatever.
Yep.
You know, and there it's like, that seems reasonable. Okay, yeah, the biogel got infected. That seems yeah. plausible.
Well, I was just going to say, the bioneural thing, again, it came from the writer's guide. Is when they were developing Voyager, they developed this concept, and I don't know whether it was Narain Shankar, who was the science advisor, or who developed that concept, but it was the idea that they have these gel packs that are critical to the computer and operation systems of the ship, and their bio, they're actually living organisms that are developed to actually be able to think their way around various problems. And so, again, when we were looking for, okay, here's the A story is, you know, Tuvok is night school, Starfleet night school with these kids. What is the B story? What's going to be the danger to the ship? And we just thought it would be really cool if, you know, Voyager was not really meant to be in deep space. It was during, I think, a shakedown cruise, right? Wasn't it like a newly out of space dock or something like that?
Yeah.
So a lot of the technology on it had not been field tested extensively. And we thought, well, the bioneural being a living thing, it would be really cool if they got a disease, or, you know, we wanted to make it something really mundane that would cause major problems on the ship. And so that's where we came up with the idea of, what if they catch a cold, and how would they catch a cold? Well, there's going to be all kinds of because they're in a different quadrant, there's obviously going to be different bacteria and different viruses that are in that quadrant. We thought, well, we're going to have Neelix make some cheese out of some, you know, Schlicht, I think was the name we came up with for the milk that was brought aboard. Again, try to throw a little bit of an element of comedy into the episode. Because we thought it would be fun to see this high and mighty starship brought down by something very insignificant. And so that's where that came from.
We
also really like the idea of get that cheese to sick bay.
Exactly.
That was an important element of the show.
I think that totally worked. You know, it was very funny, and you know, I appreciated it quite a bit. I don't quite understand why everyone has such a big problem with it. But
well, I'm a big science guy. I'm very into science, and there are episodes of that show where they throw all logic and all science and all mathematical reasoning skills out the window.
And well, when no, they say, no comment on that.
Okay, but I mean, like, in the second episode, they find a tear in the event horizon of a black hole, and that is such gibberish. It only works as a joke. Uh-huh. And get the cheese to sick bay seems so reasonable by comparison. I just go, well, yes, that you. Makes sense. That seems like a reasonable course of action. You would take the cheese to sick bay. Good point. I agree, Janeway.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it.
Okay. So you said that you were a Star Trek fan prior to the show. Were you a fan of the original series growing up, or
absolutely
Next Generation? Yeah,
I can't say that I saw it. It was, you know, it was on TV when I was pretty young, its first run, and so I didn't really see a lot of episodes, but I saw it after college. It, you know, it seemed to just run constantly every day, and so I became a huge fan of it in its reruns, and yeah, so, you know, I got to, like most Star Trek fans, like, I could recite dialogue along with all the characters, and have my favorites of the original show, but no, I was a huge fan of that show. And then it was such a nice surprise when Next Generation came along, and really, I think, was a nice, you know, improvement upon the original in many respects, while still retaining the flavor of the original, and not, you know, because Gene Roddenberry's canon was so strong, and his concept was so strong, it still had that Star Trek feel to it, even though it's a different ship and different crew.
So, as a Star Trek fan, what do you think about where it is now? What do you think about the latest movie and Into Darkness, you know, the upcoming movie and all that stuff?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask.
Mike, get your finger over the bleep button.
Yeah, I like the idea of looking at Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Scotty as iconic characters that can play, be played by different actors. I like that idea. You know, they are like Sherlock Holmes or a James Bond. Their characters are so strong that they do survive that kind of translation into different situations. And I like, for the most part, I like the cast of the new movie. Movies have to do different things than TV shows, and I think this is one of the reasons that the one that came out a couple years ago, Star Trek movie, was fundamentally different. It was far more action-oriented. It was bigger. It was more bombastic. And in some respects, to me, as a longtime fan, it didn't feel as much like Star Trek. There was no big philosophical issue. And this was one of the things that Michael Piller always stressed to us. And he was really, you know, he carried the lantern for Gene Roddenberry's ethic, is that episodes had to be about something. They had to be about the human condition. They had to be about something philosophical or you know, a big issue. And I don't think that this new movie is that. I think it's moving into a more action-oriented direction. I'd love to see, I think Star Trek should be a TV show, personally. I like movies. I like the idea of the movies. But I also think Trek works really well as a TV show. It's on a week-to-week basis. There are so many great issues, so many great philosophical and ethical issues you can get into. And that's what the best of Star Trek, The Next Generation, DS9, and Voyager did. The best of those episodes are the ones that really dealt with the human condition and used the science fiction of the 21st century as a way of getting at what people are like today. And, you know, I think that deserves to be on TV.
Well, Ron, any final thoughts on your time at Star Trek?
Well, I'm really proud of the fact that I was able to work on the shows. I mean, in retrospect, the shows really stand up well. Every now and then I'll be watching or flipping through channels and see Star Trek, Next Generation, or Voyager, or DS9, and flip on. And you know, they hold up well. They're good shows. And I'm proud of the work that I did on them. You know, I'm glad I was there, glad I was able to do it. Wish I had done more. I mean, we had actually written episodes in the seventh season. We actually sold them two episodes that didn't get on the air just because of one reason or another. But there you are.
That's really cool. I wanted to just say, like, I recently watched all of Next Generation with my girlfriend, soon-to-be fiancé, and we got to Lessons. And after a long time of talking about possible wedding music and this and that, and like she brings up terrible options, and I'm like, no, not Madonna, not Madonna, no Madonna, that's not going to happen. And then she, like, we watched that episode, and she was like, what about that music? And I was like, that would work.
Oh, that is so flattering.
Well, Ron, where can people find you if they want to?
The best place to find me is on my website. That's ronwilkerson.com, ronwilkerson.com. And I have an essay, actually, that I wrote on the development of Lessons that's in my review section. If any of your fans are interested in reading about how Lessons came about and the development and all the various things that happened on that show, they can read about it there. And I have various other essays up about, I have a tribute to Jimmy Doohan, who I worked with on a commercial project. And found him just to be one of the nicest and decent, most decent people I've ever met in my life. And it was just a pleasure to be able to work with him. And I have a tribute to him on there. So check out my website.
Cool. And then I'll
keep posting new stuff.
All right. And you're also on Twitter, right?
I am on Twitter, Ron_Wilkerson.
Okay, cool. And the book is called Houdini and Lovecraft, The Ghost Writer. And you can find that on Amazon.
Yes, you can. You can find it either by the title or by my author page on Amazon.
All right. And we will be talking about that next week.
Look forward to that.
Yeah. Thanks again for joining us. As always, you can find us at commentarytrackstars.com, where we do our other show, or you can find us
Trek
on
FM.
Trek.fm or on Twitter at ComTrackStars. So we will be back next week with Ron to discuss Houdini and Lovecraft, The Ghost Writer.